Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. Thank you to patrons, including Rich, Mike with an I, Mike with a Y, Nick, Luke, and a different Ian, who support us directly. And for the price of just a cup of coffee a week, you can join them, get access to our full-length ad-free show, listen and chat with us as we record live, and get our Patreon-exclusive sister show, Extra Message, which I usually don't fluff words in as often. Find out more at patreon.com/UK Tech.
Sounds like your tongue's sweating, mate.
If that were the only thing on my body sweating right now, I'd be very pleased indeed, because the sun is shining again this week, and I hope everyone listening, I hope your celebration balloons have been amply inflated and that any cake or ice cream stains dribbling down your summer garments in the heat are impermanent. One man whose frustration with the world and its faults is also impermanent is, of course, Ian. You were about to tell me how you were. Please continue.
I am hot. My hands are sweating. I can't open the window because the football's on and people are shouting mindless chants. And I don't care for it. It's obnoxious.
And it is a little.
I thought I'd move to a place where that kind of hooliganism wasn't permitted, but it seems that even in Surrey, people are allowed to be in their garden yelling things about football.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
Very good.
Very sorry. If you have a frustration about football, you can send it in to us. Just simply mark it as for deletion. Now, it is E3 this week, so I wanted to pick a gaming topic to kick off this week's show. Sorry, no football pun intended there. That was entirely unscripted. And Microsoft said its Xbox gaming unit is working on new hardware and deals with TV makers that will let people play games and experience the Xbox without needing to buy a gaming machine, i.e. a console or a PC. This is according to my Bloomberg colleague, Dina Bass, but also me, because I wrote part of this story as well this week. Now, the idea would be to embed the Xbox experience directly into an internet connected TV, and nothing else would be needed except for an Xbox controller, Microsoft said. Meanwhile, Xbox is also building streaming devices to enable cloud gaming services on any TV or monitor, which I found deeply, deeply fascinating. Now, I had access to some of this a little bit ahead of time, and there was a stream, about an hour-long stream, that Microsoft did eventually broadcast, I think, but I watched through the whole thing, and it was Phil Spencer, Xbox head, and a few other Microsoft execs doing kind of like a fake scripted interview. And I liked the part where this particular bit of news was announced because of how kind of totally scripted and not really very natural it sounded. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, yes, please.
All right, here it comes.
Hard at work on new hardware and platforms, some of which won't come to light for years. But even as we build for the future, we're focused on extending the Xbox experience to more devices today so we can reach more people, as Kareem talked about. And many of those devices won't be built by us. For example, we're working with global TV manufacturers to embed the Game Pass experience directly into internet-connected TVs, so all you'll need to play is a controller. Beyond that, we're also developing standalone streaming devices that you can plug into a TV or monitor, so if you have a strong internet connection, you can stream your Xbox experience.
Very nice. That's how this was announced. And as you can tell, there is not a lot of detail on offer there, other than the suggestion that maybe some of this stuff will take years to come to fruition. And I spoke to Microsoft's, she's the vice president, Xbox vice president, Sarah Bond, about this. And I tried to pry some more detail out of her, but she wouldn't be moved. But she did tell me that subscribers to Xbox Game Pass now spend about 20% more on games and downloadable content than they used to. Sorry, they used to spend about 20% more on games, and they now spend about 50%. So there's a real justification here, I think, in them saying, well, look, whatever you want to play games on or have Game Pass on, that's fine by us, because the more devices you have it on, you are statistically more likely to want to spend stuff inside those games that you're getting as part of a subscription. So overall, this came across as a big win for Xbox streaming, but also with the promise that Xbox maybe isn't even going to be that much about consoles in the future, long in the future maybe. So what do you make of this, Ian? Were you following this? Did this interest you?
I mean, I was aware it was happening. Let's put it that way. Yeah, you know, it's cool. I think it's Microsoft's the most progressive company when it comes to shutting down its hardware division, isn't it, really? It's almost like operating a game console division is a bit of a chore, and it wants to get back to the business of software. But actually, great. Why not? If they can make it good and, you know, do stuff to reduce latency and make it a really good experience, fantastic. Who wants to buy a console? I'd much rather subscribe for a few quid a month and then have the option about whether I, you know, unsubscribe for a couple of months when there's not new games that I'm interested in. It's great. It's going to be a wonderful new way for people to enjoy premium sort of AAA games. Fantastic. Especially in a world where we've got no flipping GPUs or CPUs to buy.
I asked Sarah in my interview, that, by the way, that's not the lady you heard speaking before, it's a different Sarah, basically what the role of a console is in future. And her answer is that's sort of the premium way to play games. So that's always going to be the way that Microsoft will say this is the best way to play games. And everything else is these are the other very good ways of playing games. It's kind of like with product tiers and different SKUs, you get good, better, best. You never get bad, good, brilliant. You always get, it always starts at good and the better and the best. And in this instance, the Xbox will be the best, and then below that maybe cloud streaming, and then below that will be streaming from your home console on another manufacturer's device on the other side of the world, something along those lines. But I think it's really reassuring, because at the end of the day, I've played some of this stuff using cloud streaming and the technology works well. And we've seen apps like Steam Link be on the Apple TV, and we've seen others on Roku boxes and similar smart TV software apps as well. And this technology does generally work quite well. And if Microsoft's going all in on this down the line, there's a few companies that could do it better than Microsoft, because of Azure and because of all the money it has, basically, to pump into this. Which is the same argument I said about Google Stadia, but we all know how that
But Google doesn't care about products. Google's like an excited child. You know, they're all about the dopamine hit of launching a new product. Oh, look what we've done. We've created this product that does this, 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 and this. It's fantastic. And everyone's like, you know what? That is fantastic. Well done, Google. You've done a really good job there. And then the dopamine dies down and they completely lose interest. They have absolutely no idea about how to structure teams or how to manage projects. So it just doesn't deliver on any of the promises. And then eventually they lose interest. It doesn't make any money. They shut it down. And then they start again with a new project that they don't care about and will ultimately get shut down.
John in the live chat room listening live says Xbox Streaming Stick will be free with Game Pass, I reckon. I actually think it might be the other way around, and that in a future you can buy the Streaming Stick and you get like 3 months of Game Pass or something along those lines. And it goes with what we heard from the Xbox exec, the sound clip we heard earlier, although we didn't because I didn't play it all the way to the end. But if I had have played it to the end, you would have heard her say that they're also partnering with telcos, you know, mobile networks and broadband providers, to say, well, here's the Xbox and Game Pass as part of a monthly subscription package, which we've seen done for other products. Of course, mobile phones being the premier one that sort of example before.
I actually agree with John. I do think they'll give the stick away if you subscribe, but you know, if you commit to a year or something, I think you'd be able to get one for free. I think what's interesting about this is if it follows the Netflix model. So Netflix is quite well known for offering ISPs hardware that they can put at the edge of their network. So basically, if you're on Virgin and you're near the new Malden exchange, then there might well be a Netflix appliance in that exchange, and it will be loaded up with the most popular shows on Netflix at any one time. So anything that charts will be in there, and probably some room for caching. So when you start streaming, it's not coming from, you know, Netflix's office in, you know, in a data center in London. It's actually coming from your ISP, which is extremely important because it reduces the amount of bandwidth used on the you know, the connection between the ISP and Netflix. So, you know, Netflix isn't constantly having to upgrade bandwidth from its end to serve that much data. Instead, it's shuffling a load of that over to the ISP. But that's also good for the ISPs because it means they're not shuffling traffic all across their network. It can be kept more local. Of course, the closer an Xbox server is to you, the less latency and delays and potential hiccups with, you know, connectivity is going to be. So who knows? Maybe we'll start to see Virgin Media doing partnerships with Microsoft where it's got those servers quite geographically close to everyone playing. And we'll start to see, you know, latency with delays that simply aren't a problem for gaming.
Well, I mean, thinking about the streaming sticks, which is the aspect of this I find most interesting, because it's essentially saying, here's a very cheap thing that could probably replace you needing to buy an Xbox because our cloud infrastructure is so good. And, you know, prices today, you can buy a Chromecast, I'm looking at their Google store, £30, and you could buy an Amazon Fire TV stick, 4K, that comes with, you know, your iPlayer apps and Disney Plus and stuff, for £50. So that's, they're going to get cheaper, but that's, if you imagine that Microsoft came out with this year, which I doubt, because I think this year is going to be the year of cloud streaming. I think next year will be hardware. But if it came out with this today, you could see an Xbox stick that costs, I don't know, £35, so undercut Amazon slightly. It offers Game Pass for 3 months bundled in. You get all the apps that come on the Xbox anyway, like Netflix and iPlayer and ITV and stuff. And you can play your games on it, and you still have to buy a controller. But that's a very compelling entry point.
You wouldn't even need the hardware for a lot of people. A lot of TVs have got more than adequate hardware for that kind of thing, I reckon.
You might be right, I suppose, but latency is such that anything that can keep that, even, you know, shave a few milliseconds off, is good. And I do find that the interfaces for smart TVs tend to be a bit sluggish.
Well, maybe, but yeah, but they've certainly got the hardware built into them necessary for decoding Ultra HD streams. So really, if that's all just an Ultra HD stream or an HD stream, then the TV's already got pretty much all it needs, as long as it can support Bluetooth with relatively low latency, which I don't see why they wouldn't, because it's part of the more recent Bluetooth standards. So who knows? We'll see. But it's certainly going to be a possibility, because that's already the way it's looking.
It's promising, isn't it?
Well, they can do it in a web browser, mate. They can do it in anything.
Fair play, fair play. That's true. Well, Microsoft has its E3 stream tonight with Bethesda. I don't think we're going to hear much about this. I think that's the reason they separated the hardware enterprise announcements from the software and consumer announcements into two shows. But it will be interesting to see if it gets flicked at least, and if we learn a little more about timeframes. But based on the clip we heard earlier, you know, this is part of a years-long journey for Microsoft rather than one to expect in the coming months. But any thoughts you have on this, of course, let us know. UKTechShow@iCloud.com. Lossless audio, Ian, spatial audio. This was the hot topic for tech and Apple and music fans alike around the world this week, because Apple did, as expected, launch its lossless and high-res audio streaming service on Apple Music. And we have a lot to talk about that's not going to be specific to Apple Music. So don't worry, friends. We didn't start with Microsoft and end on Apple. We're going to go into quite a bit of detail about some of the problems here, as well as some of the advantages. But let's just recap a little bit about what was announced for Apple Music subscribers. The first is that the entire library of Apple Music songs, which is about 75 million or so, by the end of the year will be offered in lossless audio quality. So that's a massive step up from the compressed AAC versions that are available today. It brings it on par with if you were actually listening to the CD with nothing removed from it whatsoever. But on top of that, it's making several million songs initially available in high resolution audio, that is up to 192 kilohertz, which is about four times higher resolution than CD and current streaming services. And it's going to be able to store all of that extra data in 24-bit instead of 16-bit. So 50% increase in bit depth for storing that high-resolution audio. And on top of all that, it's launched spatial audio with Dolby Atmos for a limited number of songs. And that is, for those unfamiliar with the term, is basically like movie surround sound, but for music. It's more nuanced than that, but that's in general what it's like. And this was announced, as expected, as a free upgrade to all Apple Music subscribers. So it's not an extra cost. And it trails the launch of similar services, as we've seen from Amazon, which has its HD music service. Deezer has an HD music service. Tidal has a hi-fi tier as well and has done for some time. But this time we're seeing it get quite competitive, because as soon as Apple announced this, Amazon dropped the price of its HD streaming, and I suddenly started getting a lot of emails from public relations people at some of the smaller companies promoting the benefits of their competing services. So it's definitely heated the interest up. But I feel Apple has only really pushed the spatial audio aspect of this service, and it's the one that most people will get to experience in terms of actually noticing a difference, for reasons we'll come to in a little bit. And you've been trying spatial audio, I think, Ian, haven't you?
I gave it a little go, mate. I wasn't that impressed.
Give me your first impressions then before I do.
Well, it's a bit limited in what you can... Well, I suppose it's not limited in what you can listen to it with. But for me, it was very unappealing. And I know you and I, we had a chat about this, didn't we, during the week?
We did.
And I just... It just doesn't sound very good to me. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad. It certainly doesn't cause any problems, but I really struggled to tell the difference, honestly.
I noticed it make a difference, and I noticed this a similar, for a different reason, with the high res. The heavy metal, and I mean very heavy metal, being quite noticeably different, because there are often so many competing and loud noises all playing at the same time, that having the extra spatial depth helps separate guitars and vocals out in a way that is traditionally quite difficult to do. Similar is often true of orchestral music for different reasons. But I noticed a big difference with that, with spatial, but not enough to benefit me, I don't think.
But this is all trickery, right?
And I turned it off. Well, define trickery.
Well, it's all just processing. It's not, most of these tracks are not mastered spatially.
They are. This is the difference. Yeah. A lot of people will have experienced like a binaural recording. And I say a lot of people, probably very few people. But if you're a fan of ASMR recordings, where it sounds like the person is breathing behind your head, if the person doing that recording has really got a good setup, they will actually have a... It's like a hollowed out human skull. It's quite disturbing looking. And the microphones are actually placed in the ears. And the advantage of that is you get a natural three-dimensional sound as if it was recorded within your own brain. Because, you know, surround sound works because the speakers are physically behind you. But the human ear and the brain works the way it does, even though you only have two ears, that you can hear something coming behind you and in front of you. And if you use a binaural recording head, then you're getting the same effect, even though it's only coming from a left and right channel. Dolby Atmos is different, but uses similar sort of psychoacoustic trickery, I think, where it is mixed and at the mastering level, so the instruments and sounds sound like they're coming in front of you or behind you, but the way it's being delivered is technically artificial because it's all done through algorithms as opposed to just physically recording.
Yeah, but it has a lot of extra physical channels that it can use to make that effect more, you know, obvious.
Yeah. John in our live chat says he finds the Art Blakey album the most noticeable if you want to test it. I believe he's talking about the Apple Music Dolby Atmos. And the track, album I would recommend for hearing binaural recording is one by Pink Floyd. I think it's called The Final Cut. I meant to Google this beforehand, but I think they record elements of that album using like a binaural audio head thing. And there's a particular bit where you can hear a plane flying sort of over and behind you, and it's quite disconcerting how realistic that sounds.
Yeah, I mean, those are very specific recording techniques that work. I mean, the head thing obviously works because they're placing microphones in sort of fake ear canals. So presumably the shape of the ear, the artificial ear, helps to direct the sound in much the way the human ear does. And then, you know, the microphones being inside are able to differentiate their position because it's something we're very familiar with. And if you go on YouTube and watch one of those binaural recordings with any pair of headphones on literally any device, it sounds incredible. But that's nowhere near what I heard when I listened to the music on Apple.
I think it's different, but it is comparable. And Apple's pushing this very hard, very hard. You know, if you go on Apple Music, you look everything, it's spatial this, spatial playlist, listen now in spatial, 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 spatial. And, you know, part of the reason is because there is a benefit if you're listening on an Apple set of Apple headphones. But do not be fooled. You can listen to spatial audio from Apple Music using regular headphones. I've used it on my Bang & Olufsen H9Is, perfectly fine. You just have to tell the settings app that you want to force Dolby Atmos all the time whenever it's available, as opposed to automatic, which is only when it's available and if you're wearing Apple's own products. So you can force it. But it wasn't good enough for me to keep it on, even though it's the most immediately noticeable upgrade for most people, I think. Let's talk, though, about lossless and high res a little bit, because Ian and I got into, not an argument because we were in agreement, but quite a heated chat, wasn't it, about some of the limitations here and why we're a little disappointed with Apple's high-res lossless, because there are very few products and methods that support the listening to Apple's high-res. For example, any Bluetooth headphones, they don't support it. That includes all of Apple's own products. So the AirPods Pro, even the AirPod Maxes, are not supporting lossless high-resolution audio because they use Bluetooth. If you have an Apple product that has a headphone socket and you plug headphones in with a wire, that also is not supporting the high-res lossless, although it is supporting lossless, because you need an external digital to analog converter. So you buy a separate one. I did an extra message about this one where I promoted. I just bought one. I wasn't paid for it. In fact, I paid for it. The Meizu high-res audio DAC, which I know John in our live chat, who's getting a lot of mentions this week. Thanks, John. Also bought and found the benefit of, but you need to use that. If you have an AirPlay-capable hi-fi, as Ian does, and in fact, as I also do, you can stream lossless to it, but it doesn't support high-res because the specification of Apple's own wireless streaming technology, AirPlay and AirPlay 2, also don't support high-res lossless.
Yeah. And this is where it started to lose me, really.
It's very challenging, yeah.
Because it's almost impossible to hear high-resolution audio on an Apple unless you've got a very specific bit of hardware, which you've managed to discover.
I did manage to discover, yes. So I did find that some old Macs and MacBook Pros do support optical digital out in the regular 3.5mm headphone socket. And this is something that Apple used to support on the Apple TV, and you could output digital optical from that, but they got rid of that as well a few years ago, so that's no longer a standard. It also used to come as standard on the old AirPort boxes. I've got an AirPort Express just down to my left, actually, here. They support digital optical out. Haven't tested those with high res, but they got rid of them all in recent incarnations. Even the recent iMacs haven't got it, probably for cost reasons, but it's a real missed opportunity unless, like me, you happen to still have one of these old ones sitting around. I found that my 2014 MacBook Pro, which has been sitting gathering dust in a corner of my studio here for quite some time, has optical digital out, and my amplifier, my Yamaha, I don't know which one it is, but I'll put a link. It was a few hundred quid. It wasn't a super expensive one. That supports Optical Digital In. And this afternoon, I fired up that Mac. I upgraded it to the latest Mac OS. I installed Apple Music on it, logged in, connected the Toslink adapter to the Optical Digital cable, plugged it into the Yamaha, updated the Yamaha's firmware, and I checked, and it was indeed streaming high resolution at 192 kilohertz, 24-bit. But that is the level I've had to go to get it to work, other than just plugging in the headphones with this external DAC. It's a long way of saying it's a massive pain in the ass, and I think Apple, if it wants people to take this seriously, which I actually don't think it does, it needs to upgrade its AirPlay standard at least.
More than that, it needs to allow it on Windows, because that is outrageous.
Oh yeah, fill us in, because I didn't check this.
Well, you were the one that told me it doesn't support it on Windows. I wasn't able to noticeably see it working, but I will say it's a little bit more complicated than that, because my computer is connected to my Hi-Fi with an optical digital cable, and it Windows settings play a part in what you're able to pass out. Now, all of my settings are enabled up to 192, but the amp only ever seems to pick up 48, which is weird. So I don't know whether there's a Windows thing at play here. But you said that you didn't think that the iTunes in Windows supported lossless, but we haven't checked that, have we? Or have
I
we?
Have. Yeah, I did. When I was texting you, I did look it up, and it's not supported on Windows.
So why not?
Good question.
I mean, it's just stupid, because you're basically, people are paying for a service. It's done. You've got it. They're still paying the same price, but you're not letting them access it on, I mean, okay, sure, probably no one uses iTunes on Windows anymore, because it is extremely painful. But even so, it should be an option, right?
I have a theory. It's a twofold theory. One, you've nailed already, that it's probably a numbers game. Apple's looked at the number of people using it and just opted to not bother. But I also think compounding that is probably because there is a different level of DRM involved in the delivery. And iTunes, don't forget, is dead on the Mac. It's a separate app. It's music. It was rebuilt. And I kind of feel that it's probably a combination of that that just makes it not worthwhile bothering with on Windows. If this few people are going to bother doing it on an Apple product, even if you just went out and spent £500 on AirPod Maxes and a brand new iMac, and you still can't benefit from it, then Windows iTunes users have got no chance. No chance.
I don't disagree with Apple's way of doing things very often, because ultimately I understand why it makes most of the decisions. Like, it doesn't bother me that I can't use iMessage on an Android phone. It's just not a problem. And I understand why that is. But when it comes to something like this, where you've made the service available, I just think it's absolutely outrageous that it's not more widely available. And, you know, okay, I know you feel like they don't care about it because it's a sideshow, but I don't agree with that. I think that's just a matter of opinion, and I just don't think that's the case. You know, why bother with it? You know, the quality of the music's already fine. So what's the, you know, if you're going to launch high res, why not make it more accessible? And part of it's to do with how Apple operates its ecosystem anyway. But part of it is just bloody mindedness. And I find myself actually quite irritated by particularly AirPlay, which realistically could quite easily support this kind of transfer.
And it uses Apple lossless as the audio delivery vehicle, so it could technically, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, you'd be getting, it's already doing that kind of, in fact, I haven't looked into it, but presumably if you were to stream an AirPlay film from your phone to a TV, you know, to an AV receiver, that would be using way more bandwidth in total than would ever be needed for lossless audio. So I don't really understand why they haven't enabled it on AirPlay, especially on devices that support those high bit rates. Like, it shouldn't be, obviously, it isn't going to be mandatory. Not everything's going to support it, because not everything's good enough. But this little wonderful, absolutely wonderful little Cambridge Audio machine I've got, it could easily support it. It sounds phenomenal. I absolutely love it. It has a built-in Spotify app, so if Spotify launches Hi-Fi, I'm pretty sure I'll be able to listen to high-res Spotify. But there is no Apple Music app for these things. It's all AirPlay reliant. So unless they were to do something like that, where they do, I mean, Spotify Connect is one of the many reasons that Spotify is quite good. You know, Spotify Connect means that you can listen to stuff on almost any device. You know, there are probably fridges that have Spotify Connect built in. And it is a genuinely good service. I think if Apple were to approach Apple Music a bit more like that, it would probably find some love, especially in the high-end audio, you know, market, where they're, you know, people care about quality and, you know, they're prepared to spend money on stuff. Okay, sure, it doesn't help Apple financially, but there's more to, you know, these things than just making money. It is also a mind share, and a, you know, Apple Music then becomes a must have and a true rival to Tidal, and walks all over Spotify, which has dragged its heels on high quality audio for so long. So, you know, there are other battles at stake here. You know, market share is a problem for Apple, and I'm sure it would like a bigger market share. So why not really push this as an innovative solution? I think it's annoyed me, because I was so pleased with the way it was going, because I watch a lot of streaming, and it really bothers me. The quality of streaming really annoys me. And I miss sitting down with a Blu-ray or a, you know, an Ultra HD Blu-ray, and seeing things in crystal clear, you know, crisp, beautiful clarity with no artifacting based on compression. And I've been watching things recently. I've been going, look at this. It looks shash. Why is this picture blue and there's blocks all over it? It really annoys me. And I was thinking, this is great. Apple's gone the other way. Instead of, you know, everything being worse than the physical media, Apple's actually making it better than the physical media. Now, obviously, they're not the first. Tidal did it before. But they are a more mass market operation than Tidal. So I was annoyed. I was happy. And then I found out how difficult it was to actually make use of it. And then I was sad. And I have heard it on my phone connected to a DAC through two dongles and, you know, and a mass of cables and these headphones I'm wearing now, which are okay. I mean, they're not the world's last word in sound quality by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, all of that stuff, and it sounds great. I liked it. It was a pleasant experience, but yet they're one step away from it being actually usable, which is just, it's silly.
It's a shame, because all of the pieces are there, and this is something that's aimed at hi-fi people. I think Apple's acknowledged as much, but even hi-fi people like me that have all the equipment to support this and take advantage of it struggle to use it, unless you happen to have a specific product or something lying around that you can use in order to get it. And I think that needs to be fixed. I think Apple, I think it is stage one in what it wants to do. I think the hardware has to catch up. And I think that the easiest way for Apple to win with this is to upgrade AirPlay in a way that makes this usable.
Let's make no mistake here. AirPlay is great. Like, because so much stuff now supports AirPlay, it's gone from being the Apple thing that Apple stuff uses to being the thing that is in both of my TVs and this hi-fi and a quite an old soundbar I've got downstairs that sounds okay. You know, it's gone further than just being a niche thing that Apple stuff works with. It is, in fact, a really good system that has huge potential, but is being a bit hobbled.
Well, if you have an opinion on the lossless, high-res, lossless, and everything else we've talked about debate, let us know. uktechshow@icloud.com. Well, before Ian and I die of sweat and exhaustion in our respective studios here under the summer heat, I wanted to come to a very quick email that came in from Seb. He says, "Hey, Nate and Ian, about the theatre segment from the other week, what would be your thoughts on watching a play via VR headsets? It could provide a similar experience to the real thing. You could even maybe see other patrons' avatars sitting in the audience if you wanted to make it more similar to the real thing, though then the question emerges of whether you would then have to be limited to seating, including better or worse positioning. That might be a step too far in the hunt for realism and also limit how many tickets someone could sell, but it could perhaps be a way to drive up scarcity or maybe offer it as an early access feature. I love this idea. I feel like I almost suggested it when we recorded this episode, but maybe I didn't, because I love the idea of having a single fixed camera position, but being able to in some way manipulate the movement as you would in the old days with opera glasses or something. So if you've got the best seat in the house, but instead of having multiple cameras to see a play, you have to stay there, but via VR you can look left and right, you can maybe zoom in and out, but you're not physically adjusting the position from which you're enjoying the play. I love the idea, and it would be a great use of VR, and I think it's all over that.
You could also maybe make the argument that plays from a certain angle on a big TV in 3D would actually work quite well, but 3D is dead. It's not happening.
No. Okay. Do you know what isn't dead and is still happening?
Is it the Earth's sun? Because that's definitely still on.
You're close. It's Tom Merritt, who has been radiating heat via the Daily Tech News show over the last week, although he's been on holiday. But by the by, he normally is. And this is what's been happening on DTNS this week.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, all the details from WWDC, thanks to the Snob OS folks, what to expect from E3, thanks to Trisha Hershberger, how to avoid creator burnout, thanks to Scott Johnson, and can the U.S. forge a decent tech policy? Justin Robert Young lets us know. Also, how Generation Z is finding its identity, thanks to tech. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
If you enjoyed this episode, please do consider backing us. Become a patron. Get our full-length ad-free version. Listen live. Get extra message. Our exclusive show that goes out every between episodes for patrons, which I routinely record in a forest, actually. Although this week I recorded it in a studio about Apple podcast subscriptions, which are coming, and yes, we will be a part of that. More on that, though, over the coming days, unless you're a patron, and in which case you already know about that. Otherwise, please leave us a review. It makes a huge difference wherever you get your podcasts from. If you're listening for free, it is a brilliant way to support us for no cost whatsoever. If you've not left one for a while, maybe you'd like to leave another one. That'd be super useful. But unless there's anything else, Ian, I think I'm going to go and take even more of my clothes off and sweat in a different room in front of an air conditioner.
Yeah, good idea, man. I just think the football team might have scored a goal because I can hear a lot of shouting.
Oh, well, mate.
They've been on Twitter moaning because apparently there's a shadow on the pitch and they think it's the BBC's fault.
I have nothing to add to that. Goodbye, everybody.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.